You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Love.
And it's me, Brian. And on this week's episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 2nd of September 2019 to the 8th of September 2019. And we will kick it off with Wacky TV, Na Na Na, second season, episode 22, Clash, Holy Beast versus Pro Wrestler, in which Tatsumi Fujinami faces off with the Cyclops and the Minotaur, and the Bananas basically just use it as an excuse to interview him about his past, and occasionally have to remind him that he's got to improvise some lines for this improvised cartoon.
Just because you got the stage presence and the mic presence, you're good on that, doesn't mean you're good at the improv stuff.
Kind of do us, you know, like go from 0 to 60 straight off. He's got yeah, a little lip to it.
And they have to remind him, you're wrestling right now. He's like, oh, right, okay. Let me just,
get into the character. Get into the zone.
Yeah, yeah.
Lion fist, lemon fist.
Yep. And he finishes them off with whatever the statues were called again.
The Shachihoko suplex.
That's it.
But if we could gain all the, assuming all the power from the castle and taking in its aura, he's able to perform this most holy of maneuvers.
I think my favorite bit is where the Minotaur took out like a chair and started hitting him in the face while your man had him in an arm lock. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, you're bleeding from the face. He's like, I am. It's like, yes, you're bleeding from the face now, like that time in that other match. And he's like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
It's weird how everything in this battle, it's correlates really nicely with these like pivotal moments in your own career.
It's easier to visualize. Again, this could just be a radio play for the sake of it. But don't get me wrong, the visuals are great. Like, his legs flopping over after he did that suplex was pretty great.
Yeah, and the fact that he's the Minotaur, rather than using, like, a fork, like Abdullah the Butcher would do, he's using a gardening fork.
Yeah, yeah.
Looks good, bigger and nastier.
More blunt, though, probably.
And also, they're giants, so you got to use a bigger fork.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the scale. They're about as big as a garden fork.
Yes. And then they just discuss, well, you won, so you better say something celebratory. What did you used to say? Well, I guess you say yatta. So that's the kind of the typical thing a sportsman says.
And then yesterday he goes like, okay, I'll say it now. Yatta. And they all just give him a polite clap. He did it, everyone.
Yes, we're the first people to get the treasure.
Oh, God, it's going to be bullshit, isn't it?
I assume, yeah. I'm hoping it will, like, loop back round to taking the Mickey out of what's-his-face who created Earthbound, because that's what the entire show is a parody of, his attempt to find this treasure on TV Tokyo decades ago. Was it 26 episodes in the first season? I'm guessing it's...
I believe so.
The same in this one. It's not like, they're not one of these shows that takes a week off.
Yeah.
No, man. This, TV Tokyo is a harsh mistress.
gotta come in on time and under budget.
Yeah. Next on the list, we've got, The Demon Girl Next Door, episode 9, final exams today. I'm one of those brainy demons. Well, I was not one of those brainy demons. I did not watch this. High dive. Make a PlayStation 4 app that I'll remember to watch your shows before it's too late.
Let me see if I can remember what happened. I know I'm going to forget a lot. It was not, like, the costume part did come up in, like, a bit at the start, where one's like, can you give me, like, a costume with, you know, a bit more coverage? And she did. And the kid was like, I don't see the difference. It's like, look, it's got slight more ruffles here. It's like, we gain power by having exposed skin. I thought you knew that, that kind of thing. And it's like, okay, that's a bit weird. I've forgotten most of the episode now, but there is the bit where she has to take the exams and she challenges Momo to her worst subject, because Momo actually has pretty good grades as it happens. which is history. That's the thing she scored the least on. It was still like a 70 or something like that, something respectable. But, yeah, and obviously, you know, Shamiko sucks at everything, every subject, but it's like, okay, I'll do some intensive training. And then they come up with an evil demonic plan because it's very fortunate. The history section is on, like, I think ancient Greece, Mesopotamia, and, Egypt. And obviously Lilith is kind of like, oh, fucking Mesopotamia and Egypt. I know all about those fucking places. I know that guy. That motherfucker used me as a paperweight for papyrus, that kind of shit. So she's got the in, and it's like, okay, so you just bring me in your tea holder thing, and it's basically like looking it up on your phone, and I'll psychically link to you and tell you the answers to the questions. But, she can't quite manage to do it and does give the ancestor to the teacher to mind till after the test. This is my ancestor, not my phone. So please take care of her. And take it like seriously. She wants to win fair and square. She does not win fair and square, even though she does pretty good because, Momo also studied for the test because she doesn't like losing. Unfortunately, Momo did lose to Lilith, who also took the test because the teacher was like, oh, you're from ancient Mesopotamia. Would you like to take the test as well? It's just, it's very weird that everyone's just cool with this demonic artifact that can talk to you. Yeah, no, pretty fun again. I know I'm forgetting a considerable amount of the episode, but I enjoyed it.
That's fine. Then we got Dr. Stone, episode 10, A Flimsy Alliance. In which, the alliance turns out not to be that flimsy.
It was based on a very flimsy fucking thing.
But I think that they kind of make the point is that, Gen and Senku have got a good read of each other. They know what sort of man the other one is.
Kind of a dick.
But yeah, so after him tricking Magma and his guys last episode, Magma comes back and beats the shit out of Gen.
Well, tries to murder him.
That's true, yes. Yes, yeah. Yeah, so of course murder him first because they think he's murdered, but as a consummate magician, he has covered his clothing with blood packets.
So he can look like he's been murdered at any given stage.
Yes.
I thought they were going to do the old stone thing. It's like, no, look, he's been stabbed in the stone. He's fine.
No, the fact that it was something else.
Yeah, it was something completely different. That was nice.
But yeah, he has still had the shit kicked out of him, even if he has not been killed. And then we got there's like a long discussion between, I've just been distracted by Noel's message to say that he won't be with us for a bit, but, he's got to attend to something in his, domicile, they're trying to just figure, basically, it's a lot of our great detective Suika asking questions, trying to figure out whether Gen is a good guy or a bad guy.
Well, yeah, I did like the great detective is like, I'll figure out who the culprit is. It's like, yes, he was bragging about it over some pork.
Yes.
I was like,
and she keeps on saying the murder of Asagiri Gen. They keep going,
yeah, because they keep mentioning like, oh, they keep mentioning the guy who Gen is working for who murdered our hero. And it's like, yeah, but he keeps saying, but I'm not dead. I got better. It's fine.
Also, Chrome's now started calling his sorcery,
Sciencery.
Magma has killed Gen, thinking that Gen is Senku.
The sorcerer of this.
Yeah, the sorcerer that he thinks is helping, Kohaku win the challenges for the, village leader role.
Yeah, it's like, no way a woman would be that strong. It must be sorcery. And it's like, no, she's ripped. But, she explains her whole backstory with, like, whoever wins this martial arts tournament gets to marry the village elder's daughter. And then if you marry the village elder's daughter, you're in the family, you're going to be the next village elder.
Yeah.
And, Magma is just like, well, that's fine with me because she's going to die soon anyway. And obviously her sister is having none of that and won the tournament, but she can't exactly marry her own sister. So they just have to redo the tournament.
Yes, despite what, Ginro thinks.
Yeah, freaking dirty-minded motherfucker. It's not that kind of anime. All right.
And yeah, so Gen is like has a feather for a bit, and then him and Senku talk to each other. We don't hear what they say, and then the next morning, Gen's run off. Also, before that happens, though, they basically recruit Kinro and Ginro into their plan to have one of them win the tournament to prevent Magma marrying.
Yeah, because if one of them can win, then it'll be like a seal the deal scenario, and they've realized, like, even Kinro is kind of like, listen, it's against the rules of rules, but it's not against the rules to listen to what you guys are talking about, and you're actually not evil, you do want to help her. So, yeah, that sounds good. Also, I figure it's like he wants to marry the hot lady as well, so.
Well, there's more things to come about. There's a lot of preparation for the tournament coming up, and, yes, you're talking
about- See, this is weird. Like, I should be not excited about this tournament, Eric, but this show is consistently fucking knocking it out of the park. I'm fucking happy for that to happen.
Well, yeah.
And then martial arts tournament, yes. Yeah, yes,
it's,
please.
It, of course, this being this show, there is science to it, as you also
saw. Oh, yeah, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, so Kahaku's gonna train up, Kinro and Ginro. Chrome says, she's like, oh, the one I'd like to train is you, Chrome. But, and, cause I know you're in love with Ruri, but he's like, yeah, I'm fine. I know I'd never win in a martial arts tournament. I'm fine for her happiness for someone else.
Like he's just happy if they can get someone else to win and help her out that way.
Yes.
Yeah. That's how much he cares about her, that he's willing to give her up for her own benefit. Like, yeah.
So yeah, then Gen runs off and, Kohaku is like, he's run off. He told you he was a bad man. And he's like, no. I'm 10 billion percent sure that he's on our side. And then we see him run to Tsukasa and he explains some of these savage villagers beat me up, but I can confirm they're not a threat. And also Senku is definitely not with them. He's definitely dead. And he turns out he knows Tsukasa because they'd appeared on a variety show together.
So yeah, that kind of flashed back to him being awakened by Tsukasa.
Tsukasa had awoken him.
Hmm.
And yeah, then we get to Gen's thought process is that, yeah, he's doing this all for the promise of an ice cold bottle of Coke. Oh, sorry, a bottle of Senku Cola.
Always Senku Cola.
So that's next week, is making Gen a Coke, I do believe, or the first steps towards it.
It's the simple pleasures, I think.
Yeah, we get to introduce to Kiseki next week, I do believe. Because I've been going back and rereading the comics. I was like,
yeah,
because I couldn't remember how he got introduced, and it's like, it's the least elegant introduction of a character, but it's a great introduction. So you got that forward to. Yeah, he's the ripped old man in the credits.
Oh, excellent. Something to look forward to then. Yeah, I mean, like, I wouldn't say this was one of the stronger episodes, but it's still consistently good.
Yeah, I was of the same opinion. I think it was like, this one was the one which felt the most like a transitional
episode. Exactly.
It was like
it's
getting
between bits.
It was getting things from A to B. It's like, okay, we've got to set up the tournament. We've got to set up Magma as our new villain.
We got to set up, like, we give the context for your one and her sister. We give the context for, yeah. It's setting up stuff to come, and it's building on stuff we've already seen.
Yeah, we confirm.
Which is fine. Sometimes you got to do that.
Kinro and Ginro are now in the Kingdom of Science.
Yes, yeah.
And, yeah, it's all getting us to where we want to be. Next up is Fruits Basket, episode 23, You Look Well. Or You Look Well.
You Look Well. I don't know if I'm adding a question mark to that, but I mean, like, I assume that's the intent because, Toru gets sick. She's worried. She failed the, I don't bloody know what the hell the exams. I was going to say the junior cert, but it's not that. whatever the exam things, but they get to do like a makeup test over the weekend. So it's not so bad. A friend, goddammit, I wish I could remember anyone's name in the show, but a friend who's like into the occult and whatnot, yeah, I failed every subject rather than just the one that Toru did, but Toru's distraught because it's the one that our rat boy kind of helped tutor it in, so she's distraught and she gets so worried and pent up about it is she catches a cold. Obviously I'm guessing like was, you know, her overworking herself and that kind of standard thing. And it's a nice thing of everyone being kind of worried about her and trying to take care of her and kind of get her back on her feet and everything. Cause everyone kind of likes having that presence around but you know, they're willing to put their lives on the sideline when she needs the help as well, which is nice. Even the doctor guy, when she's like, hey, what do I doc, kind of for checking up on her. And he's like, just get better. People depend on you. That kind of thing. And I was like, that's nice. We get a lot of stuff with the, wish I can remember any character's name. I'm so bad. The cat guy.
Keo.
Thank you. We get a lot of stuff with Keo here where he's kind of like, you know, bringing her the, well, not the soup, but the making her food to recover with. And he seems to be going through some stuff. The rain is making him lethargic even after Toru gets better.
Yes, because so now I'm guessing we're getting back to the plot.
Yes.
At the end of the episode.
Yeah, there's a mysterious dude with an old-fashioned Japanese umbrella kind of wandering around watching them like a creeper, really. But
No, he's a member of the family. I know,
but like taken out of context, it's like just this dude with an umbrella watching these children
sinister.
Go come back and forth to school. I'm like, that's weird, dude.
Yeah, if you see a guy show up with him, he's probably a member of the Soma family, but is he a good Soma or a bad Soma? Probably a good Soma, because Cube was like, hey, Shiso, my old martial arts master, what are you doing here? I don't know. We'll find out next time.
Yeah, and we also get a kind of date between Keo and
Kagura.
Basically, they're just getting kicked out of the house because your one is destroying the house with her affection / anger at Keo. But yeah, there's some like kind of moments where they're just trying to stick out for each other, but both of them, like obviously Keo's trying to push her away, but she's sticking to him because she feels like he needs it, that kind of thing, less so for her own interest. And even Toru points out that, like, it's like, oh, I wish she'd calm down from it. And Toru's like, no, she is calming down from it. You can see the way she acts. She wants to be around him like 24/7. The fact that she hasn't been here in a while shows that she's giving him some space. But
yeah, if anything, she's trying to act like everything is normal.
She's trying to hold back, basically. And this is her trying to reset it to like a status quo for Kyo's sake. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, you kind of feel a little bit like, if you're kind of sorry for Kagura, because she is obviously just into Keo, you know, and
yeah.
Come along, even though he's never going to reciprocate it, and just based on clues you're going to pick up, from this now, it's like, oh, there's like a bit of affection blooming between, Toru and Keo a little bit more, so it's just like, was it her, like, all the time ago, she felt like, that Toru was like, infringing on her, kind of getting in her turf and trying to take Keo away.
That was her initial introduction, that Toru was a love rival, I believe was the term she might have used. Yeah.
And so like, yeah, like, there's those things gonna happen, but this isn't like so much so like, a very, I'd say kind of scandalous, like soap opera-esque, like kind of like, romance or shoujo comic. It's more she acts out and she has like a large personality, but when she's like being sort of, serious about things, she just sort of is a bit more reserved. And, again, you do feel kind of bad for her. She's kind of like resigned to this. But that's kind of the thing about her. She feels like kind of resigned to just the way things are. And she's doing her best to try and keep on chugging along. Like everything is okay.
And a similar kind of thing. She's acting like nothing has changed. And she's still, I'm still pining after you and still running after you and saying I fancy you and trying to get you to marry me. All that standard stuff. When she knows it's like, yeah, I know that's not. I'm not the one that you want, but I'm going to pretend it's like it's normal, not for her own benefit, not to trick herself, but for Keo's benefit. Again, very similar to Toru's kind of character, doing it for someone else despite you're going through so much shit.
Yeah. And she's also as well, only a small number of people who know about a certain thing in Keo's past, which is about to come up. You might notice that he never takes off that little bead bracelet of his, but in a little flashback on their children, it flew off.
And what happened when it flew off? You're going to find out, aren't you?
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. It keeps hinting to that kind of stuff in this episode. So and in prior ones as well. But yeah, so I'm guessing that's coming up pretty soon.
Alrighty-ho. Then we've got Fire Force Episode 9, The Spreading Malice.
They really got to settle on a tone here. middle of a life or death battle with a known child killer is not the time for fan service pratfalls.
It is when the worst character is there and like she could still be doing something and at some point she tries to evacuate the children from the fucking explosive firefight. But you know, still doesn't even manage that much. And I was kind of like, so you're just here to decrease the dramatic tension that this scene is building. Cool.
I mentioned before, you offer close have burned off, but it's all done in the best possible taste.
Fuck's sake. I was nearly hoping that your man was going to go down from that fucking curb stomp, honestly. Just like, and then he's taken out. And I was like, I guess that would have been less satisfying. Also, there was some nice bits to this fight. I'm not going to deny.
Like, even though Hoshimiya is, as I mentioned, he's a child killer, I do kind of like his particular manifestation of his pyrokinetic abilities, where it's just like his arms sort of like glowing, like
white hot or whatever. Yeah.
You're going like white hot, like the surface of the sun, say, he's doing cool kung fu moves at him.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's still a dick, and he's taken out at the end by episode's end, and I don't really miss him afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, like, one of the reasons I say fuck that guy, but one of the reasons I say I like the fighting part is because your man realizes, like, okay, so either we're about even, because he's got hot arms and I've got, like, the hot feet, but mobility, I got this motherfucker, and we're in, like, a big but enclosed space that I can use to my advantage. And when he basically what do you call him? Guilty Gear dust loop?
Dust him up.
He knocks him into the air and then just fucking juggles him. I was like, oh, that's nice. I like that. A good use of ability rather than it's like, I have 10% more power than you, therefore I'll win more. And even at that, like, he still beats him in the end, but.
Yeah.
But the fact that he becomes overheated, it's like, yeah, because I flew all the way fucking here. And boy, are my feet tired.
I don't know, it doesn't matter if one, necessarily one difference in power levels, yada, yada, yada. You get like a fun rocket powered sledgehammer heel, like from 50 stories up, right onto your noggin. That's going to hurt, no matter what rank you are in the Fire Force.
But, he's Wrecker's powered with, Shonen Hero Fire.
Guts!
He does start shouting like a fucking Dragon Ball character at one point, and I was like, oh, watch out, everyone. You know what that means when the Shonen hero starts screaming. good thing his friend was there to watch his back, as we saw in that one flashback. In this case, watching his back is freezing him entirely.
Yes. But
that works.
It does. And then the third guy shows up. And then
I don't like the way he showed up at the end. Guy. It seemed a bit kind of suspicious. It's like, and I'm here. It's like...
I think it's supposed to be a little suspicious. I don't know whether it is suspicious, but I think you're supposed to.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Find it like, suspicious.
It's either like a hint or a red herring on purpose, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to get some red herring because he then gets his arm shot off by the people who are suspicious.
Yeah. Again, it could be people working to different ends, but sure.
Yeah. But they could have shot him through the chest like they did with Hoshimiya. They intentionally just like go for a non-fatal wound that would still look pretty gnarly to show.
And also
that
would put you in with the guy who's investigating these guys. It's like, yeah, I lost an arm to push you out of the way of that blast. So you definitely have an in.
Yeah, I think Karim's from what the episode says to us here is Karim's the guy who's going to be involved with the Division 8 investigation, though, isn't he? So he's the one.
He's the shield of the first division.
Yes. And he's the one who gives Shinra a handshake at the end. I do like his line about he's got to figure out whether Wrecker was a hot-blooded guy who turned into a son of a bitch or a son of a bitch who turned into a hot-blooded guy.
Yeah. Again, his repeating thing initially was like this weird joke, but it's becoming better as it goes. Weirdly.
Yes. Yeah, because the way the wordplay, it's a weird vocal tick to begin with. And then, yeah, the stuff last week with, the kids managing to convince him to allow them to join with his investigation. Though, as we discover, Arthur just got himself lost.
I did like his smile at the end where it's like, I'm a cool guy wandering the wastelands. Like, you're fucking lost, dude.
He's going for the long walk across the cursed earth.
Yeah, pretty much.
We learned more about the evangelist, who I think we neglected to mention last week, as the person who Wrecker is following.
Well, more of it comes up this week.
Yes.
All he did was mention it by name last week.
But this week
he explains what that is, mostly.
Yeah, the natural person involved, not this sort of
vague concept
or belief. Mm. There's actually somebody like controlling this. But we knew that because he was calling somebody on the phone last time, so.
Yeah, sure.
And the insect reacts to Shinra as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's trying to crawl through its little jar to get at Shinra's flames.
Yes, because he's got the Adola Burst, the purest of flames. And apparently the Evangelist's plan and their followers, who include the two assassins who are sent after them to silence Wrecker, are to turn the Earth into a second sun and to turn everybody on the planet into fire.
Yeah. If we keep killing people or turning them into pyrokinetics, then they'll be able to use all their fire powers at once and turn the Earth into a second sun, as is right and holy.
Yes, and obviously. They mentioned that they've been kidnapping children for years to train them up, and then Shinra's like, did you kidnap my brother? And he seems to have just, without Wrecker confirming, he seems to have jumped to the conclusion that that is what's happened to his brother.
It lines up like that. That his family died in a big fire. He became a pyrokinetic. His brother went missing / possibly still around is the thing. Yeah, it is jumping to conclusions, but he's trying to draw on what little he does know.
Yeah, I mean, it seems more like a very highly probable hypothesis or theory, certainly. As well, like, you know, there's, besides fighting the fires themselves, you know, there's lending through this investigation of other divisions out, like, another thing that firefighters do is also they investigate often the causes of fire as well, and they work with the authorities to do that. Mm. So they got to have a bit of an eye for investigation as well.
The fires are like, they were thought to be a natural, inverted commas, happenstance. But if someone's actually going out making infernals and that kind of stuff, then it becomes more so, like you say, a criminal investigation rather than an accident investigation, that kind of way.
Yeah, and he also thinks about, like, all the other fires that he knows about that involve children from other people's pasts as well.
Yeah.
And then after the credits, we learn that Tamaki has been, due to her assisting Wrecker in his kidnapping of children, even though she wasn't aware of it, she's on suspension and has been assigned to the 8th Division.
Yeah. I did like it. He's kind of looking around the firehouse. He's like, yeah, all these people, they're kind of like family, and this is going to become my home. Wait, what the fuck are you doing here?
Oh, no.
Finally got rid of Arthur, and now you're here. I do like they had to put him out of missing persons thing. That's how thoroughly lost he is.
They didn't even have to do that to Zorro yet.
Zorro's an outlaw, so they don't really care if he's gone missing or what have you.
Well, to be honest, it was safer while he was missing, but we'll get to that when we get to One Piece episode.
Yeah.
I was wondering if they were going to do some kind of Christian symbology with this, not only with the church thing that they have, but saying he is like this pure flame kind of thing. I think there's some depiction of angels where they're essentially walking on fire, like fire coming from their feet, that kind of thing. And it didn't click with me until he said it this episode, and I was just like, okay, it could be something like that he's some sort of harbinger of Saul or whatever they call their god. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting one.
Well, you're definitely picking up what it's laying down then in that case.
Yeah, no, I think that's the symbology it's kind of going for, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it's specifically Christian, but that is definitely the symbology that it's going
for. Yeah, but there's solar worship. The crosses, there's definitely like Christian symbolism, but not necessarily, it's not obviously drawing directly on Christianity. Yeah. But yeah, it's sun worship more so.
Yeah, there is like solar worship has been like in many cultures across the years, and some of those customs could have been, as Christianity has wanted to do, may have been appropriate in the
first
place. Just swap out solar God, and let's put regular God in there. And
yeah,
now exactly. it all counts. Now it's all works with everything else.
Yeah, Atenism is the big Egyptian one, which happened of there is no longer multiple gods. There is just a single God, and it is the sun. And we're not worshipping it in its anthropomorphic shape anymore. We're worshipping it as a solar disk. I think the new Eric Lang game that's coming up is kind of based along that, where you're playing, gods, and the end game is that your polytheism has turned into monotheism.
But you're the monotheist deity.
Yeah. I think it's ancient Egypt is the setting for that. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, as long as I'm Pharaoh and the embodiment and avatar of this god, there can be no dissension, because I speak for the one god, and it speaks through me, so everything I say is right. You can't just come up and say, Anubis actually says in his scripture, no, Anubis never existed.
In that respect, it definitely sounds like, the Pharaoh making a power play to cut the power of the priests.
Yeah.
More than anything, but I guess that will play in as we go. Also, there's like, they really drive home the name of the corporation they're going to have to investigate at some point, because there's loads of shots of this one plate inside the factory with that name on it.
Yeah. I think it's all like interlinked, and like you said, like I imagine it is some kind of power play that someone is using the fear of turning into an infernal to propagate this religion, which propagates up you as the main power source, whether you're the church or something that's infiltrated the church. It's interesting. All right.
I'm really impressed of how fast the story goes, though. So that's the main thing I'm taking from it. I was like, as we said before, it definitely feels like the writer's got an ending in sight. And I believe next episode we should see like a bunch of other characters of importance.
Right.
Like, it even felt like initially they were going to go through each station one by one, and that would bring us to the conclusion, but I'm like, they might even skip past that a little bit. That's just the kind of basic framework.
Say every other station or company is involved up to their neck in this conspiracy or hiding wherever they know.
Yeah.
It could be just like, the fifth, yeah. One, oh yeah. So it could be just like another like handful then that they just need to best get. Rest of them are just like dopes who don't know what's going on, as they're just doing their job.
Or they're involved in it like, the fifth were involved in it in that they were selling information, but they weren't like, they weren't getting their hands dirty with it. They were just like selling the information. That's a different kind of involvement than being directly, murdering children is a more direct fucking problem, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. There was three main ones we're trying to do. One to investigate, obviously Company 5, because they have all the research and things. So you have Company 1 is close to the church. And then there was another one that was close to that. Was that the corporation?
There is one close to the corporation.
I've forgotten which one was the corporate one, but yeah.
I think if I remember correctly, the next bit is like a big meeting where they're discussing, what the hell's going on with people deliberately making infernals. The stuff Division 5 had found out is definitely something we keep secret. The fact that members of Division 8 and members of Division 1 had to capture a member of Division 1 who was turning people into infernals, and then that person got assassinated by strange white-clad masked assassins, is probably something harder to cover up.
Yeah. Like, obviously they were in some kind of priestly kind of robes, but not the same official religion kind of thing. And it's like, they are using firepowers to assassinate their own guys, because they were like, oh, we haven't frozen, we'll just unfreeze him later. And, cause I was thinking, is he dead? It's like, no, we'll unfreeze him later and we'll question him and it'll be all good. And it's like, not if I blow a hole in the fucker. Dead. Yeah.
Also, we did something to this child, and that child did not turn into infernal. And so.
Probably worth asking about.
Sure. Yeah. The child like has some sort of reaction to his powers briefly in one scene, I think, as well.
Mm.
Like he faints, I think, but,
I think, what did he call the kid? The pilot light or something?
Yeah, they've ignited the pilot light within the child.
Hmm.
I don't think they've used the phrase yet of what they're actually after.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. It continues to be interesting. It continues to have just, the same one problematic character.
What, that one character?
Yeah. Fucking hell, man. That one fucking character. It's so easy to recommend the show, except for that character.
Yeah, well, it's easy to point out because it's often the source of it, but it does need to settle on a tone for an episode, because it doesn't... It's not just this time and not just with Tamaki. It is sometimes like, this very jarringly shift the tone in the middle of events. It doesn't feel very smooth. It feels kind of clumsy usually.
When you're one, a few episodes back, I'm not sure I mentioned it at the time, but, the Dominatrix one was kind of like lording it over him. And it's like, I look down on you because you're gravel. And then he kind of was like looking up her skirt and she was like, oh, I'm embarrassed by that. Like in the middle of her threatening speech. And I was just like, why did you guys do that? That's weird.
Next up is Hakata Mentai Pirikarako-chan episode 10, the Muchan Manju contest, in which everybody from the previous episodes, not quite everybody, but most of the people from the previous episodes have entered a manju making contest, which is going to be judged by Muchan, who is apparently these manju are designed, like a mud skipper to promote the mud skippers of the area. And the various characters, everybody but one person has made disgusting manju.
Well, I mean, like, the only one that sounds good is the one that involves murder. So, yeah.
Yes. Right? That is correct, yes.
Okay.
The final one is the bar owner, the one who's appears to not be a fairy of some kind. Yes, she's made, strawberry scented, manju, because the dough they use in this area's manju is sweetened, and so you can put sweet things in them. I think they say the most famous one, the favorite ones of the area is like ham and cheese as the center.
So like a savory one,
Yeah. So, Pirikarako-chan's like, she's putting in a vegetable, and then someone suggests, why aren't you putting in the row.
The thing that you're famous for.
Yes. And she's like, I'll put in both. And she puts them in both and it makes this horrible purple mess. The caviar boy is just stuffing in caviar.
Too much caviar. Come on. Have some class.
Yeah. It's a little goes a long way with caviar and fish eggs in general.
Yes, because the...
Or salty.
Well, the main concern of the butler is that these will be far too expensive for anybody to ever buy because they've got so much caviar in them.
What was the old man's one? It's the stuff that's on his head.
It is, and he's putting too much of that in.
Yeah, it would have been fine, I'd say, if he didn't, like, if he cut it up, because everyone's complaining that he just left, like, whole fucking stalks in, or whatever.
The woman he's in love with is putting in whatever the vegetable is that her co-worker, who declared his love to her, is in. The two ramen girls of joined forces. What did they put in theirs?
A tonkatsu one, actually. That doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah. No. Yeah. But I can't remember what was wrong with it. I know the problem was is that Muchan's like, well, there's a clear winner, but if I give it to the clear winner, then everyone's going to be really upset. And Muchan's like, I can't do this. And so there's only one thing to do, and that is just disappear. And everyone's like, it's time to judge the winner. Where's Muchan? 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 And Muchan's hiding inside one of the manju.
And the thing was, whoever wins was going to get that as the newest flavor from this company.
Yeah.
And our little fairy decides, it's like, well, I guess that means everyone wins. Coming to stores near you, a bunch of crap and one or two good things.
Yeah. And there was no episode of Vinland Saga this week due to typhoon-related television changes.
Fair enough.
A Viking would sail through that, no problem.
I feel like they'd wait. Just wait it. Just give it a bit.
We've seen him sail through worse than ever. Better. But it was quite a powerful typhoon. Like,
yeah, that's true.
The fastest in record. I don't know, stuff.
So in the meantime, I've now read all 10 volumes of the Kodansha release. So. And also learnt that you can tell the density of Danish settlement in England by the Danish settlement of England went by the density of towns which end in BY. So,
I can't think of any towns that end in BY off the top of my head.
Grimsby, that's the obvious one.
It's English geography, so I wouldn't know it as well.
I mean, there's like one, where I was born, there's the nearest one's like 15 miles inwards.
Well, probably one.
So the area I'm in, I come from, I believe was just left alone by the Vikings.
Wait, was your area inland and is the area you're talking about by the sea?
It's near the sea. It would have been right on the sea at the time. It's not on the sea.
Yeah,
at the
there you go. That's the thing. It's just like, is it inland? Ah, fuck it. We leave it alone.
No, this was by the sea. No, the ones in land is where there were settlements. Because basically the B means like, it's normally like, so Grimsby was Grimm's settlement. So somebody called Grimm settled in Grimsby, and that's why it's called Grimsby.
Okay.
The Spalding is the Spaldingers tribe, and I think it's believed that they were just kind of left to fend for themselves and left alone in Danelaw, or just outside of Danelaw, maybe. Yeah, because despite what happens in the early episodes of this, it's like, you have to remember, like, good chunks of the time period, there wasn't any war, and then occasionally, and then it would go, let's start a war again. Probably due to Bedlight Thorkell. Especially due to Bedlight Thorkell. I love Thorkell. He's so great. I hadn't realized he was a real person.
I want to marry him.
Now I've read his wiki page, it adds an extra bit of spice to his dialogue as the story goes along. Particularly all the times he says, Canute can't manipulate me, and then you look at his Wikipedia page, it's like, yeah, clearly he could manipulate you for your entire life.
This guy give him stronger and stronger guys to fight.
or not, as you'll see. Sometimes he has to be made bald in order to manipulate him to do something else after.
Treat him mean, keep him keen.
Yeah, exactly. But unfortunately, we won't see that for a long time. We won't see Thorkell wrestling bears for...
Oh, man.
Look forward to it.
I'm only going, oh, man, because I want to see it now. I'm just greedy. Well, that's all.
It's already good now, but it just gets better.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. I really like the shift when you get to the actual Vinland saga. I mean, it can't exist without the story they're currently telling the anime, but...
Mm. Well, I mean, like, the story they're currently telling is enjoyable as well, even though I know you're not gone on the order they're telling it in.
But as the basis of where the story goes, and I was like, this is something interesting.
Mm.
This is all set up to Thorfinn having, a really interesting dilemma that he has to face in his life going forward after all of this.
Mm.
But anyway. Other dilemmas exist in Detective Conan, episode 953, The Unsolved Cocktail Case, part 2. Guess what? It's still unsolved by the end of this. Well, I think someone solved it, but they haven't told us how they've solved it.
Yeah.
A lot of this is a flashback, though, as Ray, Amaru, Zero, whatever you want to call him, Bourbon, I think that's his code name, isn't it?
Or wait, I thought he was Jin. Ah, fuck it.
I can't remember which one's
Jin.
Yeah.
By the way, he got a text from Jin saying Bourbon at the end. I thought it was like, yeah.
No, he got a text from Rum saying, have you failed out?
Yeah.
About, Shinichi Kudo. Give me all you got on Shinichi Kudo. I want photos of Shinichi Kudo.
Five photos of Shinichi Kudo. My desk right now.
I like the way any of those flashbacks were kind of all like, oh, he's been injured. Injuries. He flashes back to a time in his childhood when he was injured. It's like, that's relevant now,
I think. Yes, and there's a man and a woman, and the man wants to go and work for somebody to do his research. And I was like, who are these people? Because I don't think I've seen the episodes where these people have showed up before. Or if I have, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, it could have been.
So this is the parents of... Hibara, the other shrunken adult.
Yeah, I was going to say the other child woman.
Child.
Attendant. Yes, the first child woman, because there's now a second child woman.
What?
Child woman. That's a recognized term for that child woman.
A woman who's a child.
Man-child.
Yeah, I think Hibara's like only 18 or 19 anyways, but so... It's, I always, but obviously she acts like she's a lot older. Whereas Mary is must be in her 40s, 50s, maybe.
Okay. Because I feel like this is the kind of show, like, if you're 30, you're an old man, right?
Yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah. You're bitterly dead.
Particularly when the detective boys are around. Everyone's going to be an old man to them.
That's true.
Anyway, there's more clues going on here. It definitely looks like by the end of it that the guy who was being threatened, he had a previous relationship for 4 years in the area where the girl who was poisoned came from. But it turns out the other girl is also from that area.
So it seems like she might, the one who was poisoned might be his kid from, presumably the woman he fell in love with, and then he had to go marry a well-to-do woman who was his wife who passed away recently.
Yes. And the butler came with the wife, and he appears to be
part
loyal
of the family's,
to the family. Yeah. That side of the family. And there was like some sort of payoff with the poisoned cocktail waitress. And an argument
in the
car park.
Yeah, the butler did try and pay her off with something for reasons we don't know.
Yes.
But yeah, you can make guesses pretty well.
Or she was paying him with it. We don't know which way the envelope was going.
True, true.
And yeah, the other cocktail waitress was worried that she wasn't going to be the best waitress of the year and get the bonus.
Yeah, because the one who was poisoned was kind of up and coming, and obviously your man was doting on her. So that would give her motive. And also, she has a sick father back home.
Yes.
From the same place that she's from as the other waitress, which is like, that makes me think they're related in some regard.
Yeah, I wonder whether the butler was giving the money to the other waitress to give to this waitress to give to the father.
Like the, the one who's, so the waitress, I can't remember either of their names, the waitress who was poisoned, she's like 24, 25, I think.
Yeah.
And then the other waitress is 27 or something like that. Not much older anyway.
Yeah, they could both be an illegitimate daughter.
Yes, they're both within the range to be his, not even his bastard child, because presumably it was with the woman he was with at the time, and then he had to leave her and pay her off. But again, your one saying is like, oh, she's got a sick father at home, so it couldn't be her, because it's like, no, who raised her might have been different than the guy who's her biological father, that kind of thing.
The reason I think it could be like she was giving the money to hand give to the other woman is because Detective Conan's story is really like the, oh no, I shouldn't have done it.
yeah.
Ending. Though obviously in this case, the woman's not dead. She's just poisoned at the moment, recovering in hospital.
Yeah, arsenic's nasty, but you can recover from it. Yeah.
Yeah, and they got to her straight away. So, and it looks like by the end of the episode, something in Ray's past has made him think, "I've got it."
It's like the way his relationships were in the past has made him figure out the interconnectedness of these relationships or something. Yeah. That seems to be the suggestion.
Yeah, because it was like something about he was getting into fights with kids at school
for
being half Japanese. The Hayabara's mum told him that you should go, and even though that guy, even your friend picked on you, you should go and make up, because
I'm not going to heal you anymore if you get injured fighting, but I will heal you if you get injured in honorably trying to make peace again.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That could be it. That the cocktail waitress has inadvertently got injured in attempting to make peace with the various suspects here.
Yeah.
We shall see. It was, it flew by, I will say that. And, even though that may have been because I was like, who's that person? Who is that? I think that's Hayabara's mother. I don't think I've seen an episode with her in. I did look. It's been like over 200 episodes, I think, since they brought up the fact that, Ray had known Hayabara's parents in the past.
That was 2 weeks ago in that short
regular time. It kept bringing up things in this episode that made me want to go back and watch the first episode, like in Phoenix Wright, where you review the testimony kind of thing, where I was just like, wait, she said she was at a different table when the earthquake alarm went off. And I was like, I should go back and watch that. I was like, no, No, because I'll keep doing back. It otherwise. Yes. I'll just wait until they solve it for me.
It's gotta be something they missed. It must be.
So I'm getting, I'm gonna guess the start of the next episode is gonna quickly do the denouement, and then we'll get to whatever was causing them to point guns at each other at the start of this story.
Yeah, like we've kind of like fucking lost it for the woods now. Because that bit seemed very important, and it seems like you say, at the end of this, your man's pegged it, but it's just him explaining and putting the pieces together, and like you say, the I shouldn't have done it moment or something like that. We'll see. It seems to be gearing up to be good. I feel like we've gotten all the clues, but I just can't put them together right now.
All become clear in the third act.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I feel like the poison pen message, because they bring that up at the start, I feel like it was, I can't remember what it was, but I feel like watching it again, it could be read two different ways as well.
They love doing that as well.
Yeah. Like, you're right, Brian. It is a very, like, it looks like the animation is shite or whatever, but everything that's put in there is for a fucking reason, and it makes me go, why did they do that there, though?
That's exactly what makes watching anime that enjoyable to begin with. Just, yeah. There's no, like, no bloopers or outtakes here.
Exactly. There's a prolonged thing of him watching someone put down a glass, and I was like, why did you show me that there? That's obviously important, or you're at least trying to fucking draw my attention to it so that you're drawing it away from somewhere else. Like the butler wearing his glasses in the background scene. That could have been a mistake, but I fucking doubt it.
Yeah, and now next Kodan's hint was Amaru's memory. I thought, okay, right.
Yeah. That seemed to be the suggestion, that that's how he's pegged it.
Yes.
So.
Next up, we've got a bunch of Toei stuff, starting with Reosorg Episode 25, Dancing Kuron. Yui's trying to get the guys to make a video of them dancing to the ending theme, where they dance in the ending theme of the actual show. And she's getting annoyed that Melto keeps on getting the steps wrong and he's not smiling. So she sends them on their way and decides she's going to look online to see if she can find a good video to get inspiration from. So she looks at the top YouTube search results or whatever pretend thing they've got. And it is a video that Kuron has made of him dancing with the various, I can't remember what they're called, like the generic hench beings of the Druidons.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And in doing this, it causes her to, lose her soul. And this is going viral and everyone starts losing their souls watching this video.
It's just a commentary.
So they have to go and try. They put a trace. Canelo puts a tracer on one of the videos, follows it back to this house where there's a relatively famous comedian, I think, but he's not playing. He's playing himself, but he's got a different name, presumably due to talent offices. But he's basically dressed exactly how he dresses when he's doing his comedy. And they're surprised because they're like, well, this guy isn't feeling ill at all from the Minosaur because he's full of positivity. He hasn't got any negative feeling at all. Because Kuron is legitimately his friend. And what has happened is that when Kuron was passing him a drink after they'd spent hours making this video, he accidentally dripped some of his goo into the drink and they inadvertently created a Minosaur.
Oh, that was just a pure accident, though. That's all right.
Oh, come on.
It's still gross. Don't get me wrong.
Health and safety by protocols in the Druidons are just completely...
The problem is because of that, because it's not getting any bigger, because this guy's got no negative feelings, is that the Minosaur is stuck in the internet. They're like, well, we can get in there with the Cosmo Raptors, but we need Tiramigo, and Tiramigo's watched the video, and so he's in a coma, and his soul got sucked out by the video as well.
It sounds more like a job for Gridman than...
Well, that's the thing. It turns, yes, because apparently, so they've got to go and get Tiramigo's soul back. Luckily, all the souls are in a big jar that, Wizaru's been collecting. So they trick him into dropping the jar. Luckily, the one soul which drops out of the jar is Tiramigo's. In a great bit of tokusatsu geography, it gets thrown off the edge of the screen and apparently traverses most of the town to get to Ramigo so he gets his soul back. They then combine with the Cosmoraptors. They then open a portal in the laptop which the Minosaur was in, and they go inside the internet to beat the Minosaur up.
See, I was about to ask you how the jar of souls was connected to the internet, but why fucking bother at this
Wi-Fi,
stage?
Wi-Fi, dude.
Know? Yeah.
Bluetooth
it's fine.
I'm sure it was covered, but I can't remember how they got the souls out of there. Also, Kurion's, like, getting increasingly annoyed because Wizaru's constantly insulting his video as he's talking
what,
to...
like, leaving bad comments, or...?
Yeah, no, he's just like, yeah, all these people got their souls while watching this trashy video. Here's the trash you got. Hours on that.
It's like a commentary and falling into a YouTube hole. Like, won't they just all sap up all your precious time on this earth just to fall into a YouTube hole? Get away from it. Resist its charms.
There's one spot where Tiramigo gets Melto's name wrong again, and this time he gets called Boruto.
Popeye.
There's a little bit with Yui's dad explaining that Yui never had any friends when she was younger, and so that's why it's so important to her that you do the video, and that's why she's kind of being a bit hard on you because she doesn't really know how to talk to people properly. And they're like, okay, well, that's fine. So when everything's set right, they then do the video again, and this time they get the green and the black guys are there, and... the four of them are doing it, and they guilt Banda, the Black Ranger, into joining in the dance. And then Yui, like, gives them the cue, and then it goes straight into the ending credits where they're doing the dance. Next week, more of the Ryu tribe, and looks maybe one or two. The purple knight armor thing is back, and I believe Ko meets... the previous apprentice to his master and has a crisis of confidence. So the seventh night it's called. Whether that person will be a good guy or a bad guy, I don't know. Then before we do Kamen Rider, let's hear about Star Twinkle Pretty Cure. Protect it to the end, the final Princess Star Color Pen.
Yeah, man. Getting real now. Cause just not no sooner are they back on, right back. On Earth, then to get pursued by a space patrol. It says, you're in violation of intergalactic law for revealing yourselves to Earth's population. Saying, oh my gosh, we didn't mean to do that because J.J. Abrams said it was to be fine. Is this true, J.J. Abrams? Yeah, but yes, but no, but what I meant to do was, that's it, you're out of here. You're going like be sent to a different planet now to monitor and said, no, my film career, I'm sorry. Okay, well, I guess we can overlook this. However, Precure must join the Galactic Alliance. We'd like to, but we got school, we can't. What? Yeah, we've been away for weeks now, I gotta go home and have the family out. I'm behind my archery practice, I gotta go and do all that stuff. We got, like, real problems. What? And kind of wondering why is this guy so dead set on wanting to push for them to put in joints, because, like, basically the space patrol, they feel powerless. It was on their watch that the commander Topper? I keep saying Topper, but from the guy from Dragon Ball, but it's Topper. basically on his watch, he felt that the, princesses were scattered across the galaxy and everything fell around this way, and all the space pirates, I felt I couldn't do anything, but you guys are pretty curious, you've been out to kicking ass and getting up and putting things to rights again. We need your ability, we need your power to do this. Because why would we do it? Because it's in the name of duty. This is my duty to do this. So, and similarly, you've inherited his power. It's your duty as well to go out and help the galaxy and save other princesses and stuff like that. It's like, so it's a bit of heavy tribute we're laying on a 12-year-old girl. She doesn't know what the heck to make of this, and she feels a bit overwhelmed by it, especially when, the second in command of the Knot Raiders, the space pirates, Galogar, who's this big blue musty, He-Man villain looking guy, turns up and, starts kicking it off. He's got portals. He's teleporting around. He's teleporting around behind him, punching him. You're shooting like rainbows and glitter at him and laser cannons from the spaceship. He keeps like this, like, put him in from one portal and out the other. Like, completely getting kicking her ass. And things all seem lost as well. Like, he has the pen, but then, Fluff, Fua, the cute mascot character that's like, no, when you're not alone, and teleports the rest of the girls in, and they, give him the moves. But, they're using all the special finishing moves in him, but, you know, he's surviving them. He's withstanding them. Like, oh, what are we going to do? This guy in his business. I was like, no, man, you gotta take him on. It is like, there's a lot of people out there who are wanting to help with us. And just the same as you guys came, I'm not alone. Like, they're not alone out there as well. So you got to get it together, dudes. I guess it's just by wearing him down, you know, just by, like, applying different special attacks, and they're eventually able to weaken him enough that his magical bracelet stops working that he was using, and he can no longer breathe in space, so he has to retreat before he suffocates. was causing a little bit of the rest of Space Pirates, what Capard, who was there watching, feels a bit disturbed because it seems like, oh, is this guy's like really going to town on him. This isn't exactly honorable, I suppose. I'm Capard, I'm a Space Pirate villain guy, but I have a sense of honor and things like that, and this guy isn't going about it, I think, on a most above board kind of way. It feels kind of mean what he's doing, is kind of booting around this 12-year-old girl, even though she is one of our arch enemies, but I don't really feel that comfortable with it. So, you know, maybe he might do a face turn. I had a feeling that he would, for the last couple of while, some kind of little interactions I've had. So it's probably going to happen right soon. But nonetheless, they're able to fend them off this time. And I got the last pen. They got all the princesses out. It's like, hey, all right, we've been, what's happened now? Well, just feed some food to Fuwa now. What? Oh, yeah, as simple as that. No, it's like no big ceremony. Just feed Fuwa right now. I don't feel very hungry. Just feed the mascot character already. Which they do, and all the pens turn into one pen. I guess this is the Ur pen, the one pen that's to rule them all. And what's that? Fuwa is evolving, and she evolves into this kind of weird unicorn knockoff thing, which I'm not sure how I feel about. I kind of prefer the previous cute character design. I may need to get used to this one. Is that what you're doing for me? Maybe we'll be fine next time. Well, I guess we're approaching the end game, or if this new pen will set off a different chain of events and things that gotta pick up. But to have Gallo or Garou, he's gonna be popping up next time as well, doing some more punching and teleporting around. So what episode is this? 31. We gotta check how long it's gonna go on for, but we're
going to start
39 at this stage, because it feels it's in total end game mode now.
It won't be. It will go till January.
January, okay.
But yeah, it's always a year cycle for the superhero time shows, and pretty cure. Nowadays, yeah. A decade was like the only exception, really, on that front.
Yeah. I guess we set it some other way to make it go on a bit longer. But they have all the trinkets right now, and they gotta find some different trinkets to actually get them back. Or like, I don't know, if we have to go so many planets, One Piece style, and get the coordinates, we can find our way back to the space pirate space and take on the main bad guy dude on his own turf. Probably something like that. Nice little animation cuts as well, when all the girls arrive and they're doing some nice coordinated maneuvers to try and get the best of Gallagher. So if we get some more of that, that'd be really cool as well. But we shall see. It's pretty satisfactory. It's pretty nice. I kind of upping up the stakes, you know, and they are laying on some kind of genuine, dramatic shit onto this. It's like one, actually we're 12-year-old girls. However, we've inherited this ability in the same duty we feel towards like our families and our friends. That should be extended towards the rest of the galaxy as well, but that's a lot to take in. Especially when you just want to like hang out with your friends and eat buns and maybe occasionally fight a space pirate villain. Steady as she goes. We'll see how they spin it out, how they set it back. Hopefully not in a kind of clumsy, very, very obvious manner, but we'll see how they do.
Righty-ho, then I've got Kamen Rider 01, Episode 2, Is the AI Guy Friend or Foe? In which we get a proper look at our second Kamen Rider Vulcan, who is the gruff, angst-ridden cop. And he is appears to be positioned as the philosophically opposite of 01. So while our comedian cum CEO is very, we've got to protect the human gears, they're here to help humanity, we see in his flashback, is because his dead dad was a human gear and saved his life when Daybreak Town blew up, whereas the cop was a teenager in Daybreak Town when Daybreak Town was blowing up, and he remembers the human gears coming alive and saying, exterminate humans! Exterminate humans! And so he's like, these human gears are going to be blown up and destroyed! They're a danger to humanity! And that's kind of reflected in their behavior in this episode, as two human gears are set to go wild by the giggling guy from the online terrorist organization. One is turned into like a bat type monster. That's a delivery human gear, is the first one who gets turned, and that's who the Vulcan fights. Whereas 01 fights a security guard who he'd made friends with earlier in the day, and given like a little patch to patch up the guy's uniform. And then this guy turns his friend against him, turns him into an enemy. What a terrible thing to do.
Bastard.
But he also gets a good view this time of how they're turning him. And basically they're putting belts on the human gears. So it looks like the same technology which he uses and Vulcan uses is also being used to turn the human gears bad. And so the difference in fighting is that Vulcan just blows his guy up and we don't see him again, whereas 01 this time is careful to slash the belt more than he slashes the human gear. And so later in the episode, after the fight's ended, we see, oh, that security guard's safe. He's back to normal. So the change that they're inflicting on them is not permanent. Also, they're keeping 01's identity as the CEO secret. The two riders get like a brief glimpse at each other before 01 disappears into the smoke. There's definitely something up with Vulcan's transformation. So 01 uses this card in his belt. Vulcan has to like physically pull the card apart and force it into the belt, which seems to be doing damage to his own body in doing this. His neck gets very veiny and he looks in agony as he's doing it. And then, of course, his belt is got a gun on it, as opposed to 01's, and so he transforms by firing his gun at his enemy, and then the bullet sort of loops around the enemy and then comes back at him, and then he punches the bullet to transform.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, and it kind of fits the character of like him being super gruff, super angst-ridden. But then the final thing at the end is that when he's doing his speech, his Tony Stark from Iron Man first film type speech, but not revealing that he's 01. But he's like taking command of the situation as people are like, what's causing the human gears to go crazy? And he'd got this film earlier of the day when he confronted the terrorist who explained who he came from. It's like, these are the people who are doing it. That's their website. This guy, they're the ones who are turning human gears against us. Human gears are the future. They're a boon to humanity. It's these people we need to be worrying about, not human gears. And then he tells a terrible joke after looking really cool. Because when he's being really cool, the press are like, oh, he's a great CEO. And then he comes out from behind the podium and tells a terrible joke. And there's just absolute dead except for the cop. The cop's the only guy who finds his jokes funny, and he's trying to stifle his laughing to the point where the other cop's like, are you okay?
So, yeah. I'm fine.
There's the thing. Coffee. So yeah, they've got the philosophical differences, but except there's something he likes about the guy. He finds him funny. And then the secretary AI explains the joke at the end. And he goes, okay, explain the joke. They shoot that quite well because the focus is on the cop leaving, but you just hear in the background him getting mad at the secretary explaining the joke yet again, which I assume will be every episode. And next week we get Kamen Rider, I don't know what she's called, but the other cop gets to transform using her cheetah power. Mm. The security guard guy turned into like a saber-toothed tiger thing. So they're definitely going for the classic, these are animal men. Which was where I suddenly realized, oh, that is what the gifters are in One Piece. Episode 901, Chain charging into the enemy's territory. Bakura Town, where the officials thrive. As we're introduced to Mouse Man after Batman. That was like, those are just straight up like original Kamen Rider villain type names. Mm. I was like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense because we know from the opening credits Sanji's going to turn into, finally put on that costume. Mm. And so I assume at some point the rest of the Vince Smokes will turn up during this arc. I assume also everybody will turn up during this arc. But we're a long way off that.
It seems like it's going to happen, yeah.
Yeah, based on recent events, there seems to be a lot of being drawn here. Well, this would be expected. There's all these strong dudes coming along. So
well, for a while it just felt like it was like Fishman Island, where you're just waiting for them to get there. It's like, oh no, I think here might be the fucking thing. Like,
yes.
This would be just this flashpoint for an international conflict. Because all these guys should come on this. Either to, I want to fight the strong guy, or I want to get on the side of the strong guy, or I want to make a load of money off of this conflict by getting in with the right dudes. So you have a lot of alliances being forged. Previously it seemed to be an unlikely one being made recently in the comic, but that's for another time. Right now, we gotta deal with this.
Yes. This week we've got the sumo guy wants to marry Okiku, and so he's discussing that with Mouse Man.
Mouse Man points out, he's like, she's not like in one of the important towns. You can do whatever the fuck you want, dude. Like murder her family, like burn her house down, and then she'll have to move in with you. Do it. She's not a person the way we think of people, and I'm literally half mouse.
Sounds more like a rat man to me.
Yeah, pretty much. And also, the most complaints I've seen about this episode was the huge fucking power increase of Batman.
Batman's also been pretty strong, Dwayne.
Yeah, but he took the punch. He took a superhuman punch.
He fought Superman. She probably.
I don't think his arms are made of sea stone or anything, but yeah.
We also learned Okiku is a samurai as well. And we also meet, what's the guy's name? I know, I love him and I forgot his name already.
Which guy?
The guy with the tiger on his belly.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, he's great. His name is a stupid name.
It is.
He's one of the three headliners in this town. It's crap. My brain is saying it begins with a B, but I can't think of it.
No, because it plays into his name as well. Let me look
at Barry
Gifters. One Piece.
Yeah.
Lionel Richie.
But it's the fact that his lion's head, or his belly also has a separate name to him.
Yes, it's a different guy. So that's, I think, what's confusing me. I have to remember two names for this one character.
Hold'em.
Like, it is two characters. Hold'em.
Yes. Kamijiro is his belly. Who claws him in the balls.
Yeah, because it's building up for ages, and you just see a shot of this guy talking on the phone where it's like a lion head and the claws, and you're like, oh my god, and then Otama's presented in front of this guy from Gazelle Man who's just like has a stitch in his side. It's like, I ran all the way here, dude. But like the reveal of this fucking stupid looking guy, he bops the lion in the head because the lion's like, the lion's just misbehaving or something. Like it's giving him the kind of side eye or something. And then the lion hits him in the balls, which, as his men point out, well, that's both of their balls. So
yeah, I do sound like after all a time ago when they were going to fucking Caesar's laboratory and then going to dress for most of the night. But oh my god, they're making these like different fruits to make animal guys. And oh, it's going to have a whole army of these beast people, and it's going to be completely like,
yeah, because the last time we saw a bunch of beast guys I think was like Impel Down, where we saw the awakened Zoan guys who weren't like tough animals, but the fact that they were like awakened made them really fucking crazy powerful.
Yeah, but then you've got these guys who were just like, yeah, you took the recruits, say work most of the time, but also you get like work on just like hold them right here, and you feel a little less worried.
Yeah, Gazelle Man, very very fast. Like it's not very good long distance. Short distance.
Yes, that's what causes the problem. Yes, because he Hold'em's yelling at Gazelle Man to build up his stamina, you idiot. And Kamijiro looks at Hold'em and he's like, no, I wasn't calling you an idiot. And then he hits Kamijiro.
That was it.
In the lion head.
Thought he was being insulted and he bopped him on the head for it.
Yeah. And you know that, like, Kamijiro as a lion was just like looking up at Gazelle Man thinking, oh, I see that my lunch has arrived. And resist the urge to tear his neck open.
These really crappy Zoan guys, like, even Batman has wings coming out of his butt, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I guess the Gazelle Man's problem is gazelles are supposed to have four legs, and he's only got two gazelle legs.
Well, then it is short distances, yes. like short bursts of very fast speed, not, like, running all the way fucking here.
But he's got,
yeah, his lower half is gazelle, whereas his top half is
presumably whatever physique he had before he ate the smile.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's entirely too top-heavy for the legs he's now got.
They're all horribly broken animal people, yes.
And, that is all scaring Itama.
I liked a lot of the... I thought a lot of Hold'em's voice actor did a really good job of, like, playing the thing where Itama's going, like, it's like, how did you control how did you tame the savage baboon? And she's like, animals just like me? And he's like, oh, I see. Right. That simple, is it? And she's like, yes, my lie has worked. He's like, you stupid fucking kid. Like, he did a really good job of, like, playing into, like, I'm talking to a child and I'm going to talk down to a child kind of thing. He did it quite well. Well, also just being a horrible man threatening a child. So it's going to be good to see him get his.
Tsuyoshi Koyama doing Hold'em's voice. He does lots of voices for, One Piece and other Toei shows.
Okay.
He was Charlotte Counter. He was, Hajruden. I guess that'll be his main role going forward. The giant pirate.
Wait, the giant fishman pirate?
No, the guy who's sworn to Luffy.
The Macho Man Randy Savage looking dude.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah? Yeah, you know who this is.
I know who that is, but I'm trying to fucking remember. Yeah, okay.
He's one of the Luffy fleet.
Okay, right.
He used to work for Buggy and no longer does, because he's... Sworn his loyalty to Luffy to further... Oh, I guess we'll get that reaction in Stampede, won't we?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you stole my fucking cool guys.
And Luffy were like, no, I didn't steal them. They can do whatever they want.
They pledged their loyalty to me. I can't stop them.
In fact, I tried to stop them, but they still did.
Because they specifically said, we're pirates and we do what we want.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, he's got a pretty great headshot on when you search for him on Google. He's trying to extract these dumplings from her cheek with a big old set of pliers. And there's a bunch of guys guarding the entrance to the town, and they don't have time to fight them. So he does Emperor's Haki at them, because we know the effect by now. But it says to be continued, as if we don't know what he just did.
I did like the effect actually can, like, hit the to be continued.
Yes, it was.
that was quite nice.
Yeah, they've been doing a few of those in this sequence of, like, the effect carrying over to the to be continued.
It's a nice little touch, because obviously the to be continued has been there for years now. So they might as well have some fun with it too.
Yes.
But first of all, he's gonna have to deal with a sumo wrestler. Making kissy faces. That sounds like a segue. To Gigage no Kitaro, episode 72, Iyami the Yokai's Great Love Project. In which Iyami the Yokai decides there needs to be more love around. There's not love about. So they're gonna spread love. Whether the people like it or not.
You know the way they were giving out about humans breaking seals in a prior episode? Was his seal that he was in a shed in the woods with a hat on him?
Yeah, he was just asleep.
I could hardly blame humans for that. That seems like a really easy mistake to make it. Although if I was lost in the creepy woods and saw that creepy looking shack, I'd be just like, yeah, let's not ask for directions there.
I feel like a part of why that works as well is, you know, isn't sealed up anywhere else sleeping.
Yeah.
In some versions of the kind of post this version as well, is that Iami, the yokai, has like the kind of weird looking old man head, but also has the feminine body, and it's like they can just detach, and one is a real form, one is not. Mm-hmm. Maybe you just like to see this figure sprawled out, this like, this kind of curvaceous body, you could call it that, under half. Oh no, there's some like a beautiful lady, like unconscious in this house, you should go help her, and then you rouse him from his slumbers, and then, oh, time to go spread my pickup artist ways around the world.
Anyway, the best bit about this episode, it is a great episode, is all the like the little bits where we get inside of Neko Masumi's head, but it's not like an inner monologue, it's just like a silent bit of her against noises. White, yeah.
Reacting.
And yeah. It's always like her back, the only parts where you see from the front are like the little chibi versions of her kind of wandering around it sometimes.
Yes, it's her internal reactions and her normal stoic exterior.
It's quite cute, actually, when something nice happens to her and she's like, I'm going to keep cool about this, but inside, it's just her, she's just inside her, is just going, super, super keyed up about everything.
Yeah, and even her, like, getting sad and her picking herself back up. Really, really well framed. I don't, like you said, Brian, I don't know who had the idea for that, but really well done.
Yeah, I would suspect the storyboard artist, but it might have been in the script as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she thinks that when Kitaro is very excited about the meal that she's pretending that she accidentally made too much of, but specifically made for Kitaro, and this brings out a declaration of love, but it's actually a Yami. And so, yeah, her central thing is like, do I accept this chemically induced declaration of love?
This
is the thing I want, but it's not the way I wanted it.
Yes.
Yeah. I really liked that. I said, oh, I was going to roll with this. and even after she finds out a true cause, I thought, oh, but it's right there, and this is everything I've ever kind of wanted, really. I know it's not right, but it's right there in front of me, and I feel conflicted about it, like genuinely.
I like the one-to-one with Sandwich that she had, where it gets a bit personal with Sandwich. I didn't expect that much. I did like the little appearance of she was having like a picnic or something with Wally Wall, and she had the.
Oh, the Cabidon. Yeah, the Cabidon thing.
Oh, Cabidon. And that must feel very weird then for the Wall, who was like, oh, I'm actually alive and sentient. I feel very awkward. I want to get out from the situation.
Well, he's involved in the situation, so he's like, oh, fuck, okay. This is happening. That was a nice touch.
But then he's also been affected, and he starts making eyes at...
he starts making full fucking sentences because he's been all romantic. It's amazing. Yes. That was a good bit. Yeah, there's
loads. He's flexing those tiny, still muscly arms he has. Like, hey, baby, you want to climb up on me?
And obviously the women are trying to get away, but he's a literal fucking wall, so you can't really get around him. Yeah.
I also like Sandwich's line about, oh, my first popularity phase has finally arrived.
She was almost popular.
She was due.
But then, yeah, because it plays into the thing of her threatening to kiss people as a punishment in many earlier episodes.
And the love adult old man crybaby is like, we were all saying it. Well, why don't you just do it right now? I'm right here.
One on me. And she's like, oh my. No, wait a minute. This is fucked up. No.
The best bit is, well, not the best bit. There's loads of best bits, but I do like the bit with Roly Roll just going, well, I've not been affected, but as everyone else is perving on everything around.
And at the end was like, no, I was mind controlled. It's like, no, you're just a creep. You're a creepy cloth.
Yeah, you look like more creepy in comparison to Nezumi Otoko, who also fell under the spell and started going around. He started being like the Lothario with like the rose one. Hey, baby, want to get lunch? You're buying though.
Also, this episode, I think we can confirm Mana gay. I'm pretty sure that's the case, right?
Oh boy, yeah.
Because everyone else, except for that woman who fell in love with a dog, falls in love with someone of the opposite gender, or anyone of the opposite gender.
It's like anybody's fair game now, really.
Yeah, but she specifically goes.
Yeah, I would agree with Dwayne. Yes. There's definitely an authorial point for the fact that she's the only one that happens to.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, she literally has an eyeball on her that is in love with her head right now. Yeah. But she's like, I'm going right for that cat lady right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, going straight for the one. And just going straight for fucking Nick and Moose and rather.
Yes. Said, yeah, God, oh, thank God that didn't happen. Yeah. he complains funny, about though. It, but he's the only one who gets a kick from from trying to woo Nekomatsume. Yeah.
See how picks over the next couple of months. This word of the wise.
Yeah, that's true.
I do like how excited Kitaro's dad is that he's finally found love.
My boy is growing up.
But he's so, and the opposite, when he's disgusted, is like, oh, he's gone around the town just playing with women's hearts. So I can't have that. I didn't raise him for that. You know, the parental pride versus the parental, like, I didn't fucking do that. That's clearly something he picked up off the internet. I don't know. yeah, there's loads of really good comedy bits in this really solid episode.
And Nekomatsume gets to defeat the villain and save Kitaro for a change.
Yeah,
nice. She doesn't get taken out by the villain very quickly at the start. So Kitaro has to rise to the occasion. She's actually like, I'm going to kick this thing's ass.
Yeah, well, kick him in the fucking nuts as well.
That's true,
point.
Actually, yes.
This is a nice self-actualizing moment where it's like, yeah, fucking men will do that to you. They will try and just like torture a friend to get to do what they want, which is what he was trying to do at the end there. It was like, no, the answer to that, kick in the balls. Right on.
And even the way, like, the hint of that sandwich conversation where she's like, it's like, yeah, you know, I fell in love once, but I kind of let it pass me by because I was afraid I'd be rejected, but I'll always have that memory of what the first time was like. But you're too greedy. So you won't accept that kind of shit. And I did like framing greed as a positive aspect of a character. Like, that's what I like about you. You're a greedy, selfish son of a bitch and you will go get it. It's good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. And next week it is the Yamata no Orochi of greed.
Seeing greed in a much more negative light.
Yes, yeah.
As it usually is want to be.
Yeah.
Did they miss a trick not using the handsome, like, shoujo comic Kitaro face in this one? I suppose his little guy, weird kissy face he's doing for the whole
He's doing it for all the episodes, so it's kind of great. And he's hopping around like fucking Pepe Le Pew, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Yeah, I get what you mean, but like the love struck Kitaro is kind of a fun look as well.
Oh, Megami-sama.
Rightio, I do believe that's our lot. Yeah, didn't watch anything else. That'll do. Anything coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness to let people know about?
Right, well, eventually, after a long, arduous process of trying to find a spare minute to edit it by fucking ding, Thief and the Cobbler will be up. And we also looked in, just actually found a quite nice resource on YouTube, the Thief Archive, courtesy of animator Gerard Gutkus, responsible for the restorations of said Thief and the Cobbler film. Also, there's a nice repository of other animations that Richard Williams has done and is famous for. And we might actually have to look at some of the animations he did for commercials and advertisements. Such as Superman telling kids not smoke, then have a cartoon lion say smoking is great, buy these cigarettes.
Playing both sides.
Yes, but it's all in service of his art. And have a look at those, because kind of animation used just for commercials. You can get some pretty strong stuff out there in, just had to condense it all into a half minute to 1 minute in length. There's a lot of merit there, so it's kind of a springboard to just do basically look at the fucking animation for the G.I. Joe the G.I. Joe like advertisements, because they had some cool
for the Marvel comics. Those were great. Yeah.
And so there's other similar things of that nature down the line. So yeah, it's always fun. With little Snappy said, everything does not work on us. If you do put a cool cartoon in your advertisement, it'll linger in the memory and make portray us to buy your product. Who knows?
Yeah, particularly when there was lots of money to spend on advertising in the 80s.
Lavish.
Yeah, the only other time that happens nowadays is when the government spends on that, like the Aardman, get yourself active and don't die of a heart attack adverts.
Oh, like, yeah, public service ones. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Righty, and coming up on Dynamite the Brain, we've got a episode with Lewis where we go back to 1989, climb into the Dynamite in the Brain time machine, and we go to the cinema, and we go and watch Dragon Ball Z Dead Zone. We watch the Mobile Police G-Ban film, and we watch the Akko-chan film. But we were kicked out of the cinema. We couldn't watch the Akuma-kun film. So yeah, that is what is coming up next on Dynamite in the Brain. And we'll be back here next week with more. Let's go. Goodbye.
Bye.